Blog Talk Radio.
What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Then grab it! Grab it!
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
It's Reese on the radio. It's Reese on the radio. You know what time it is. It's Therapy Thursday. It's the first Therapy Thursday in 3 years. And it's only right. Therapy Thursday. Now, trust me, I don't have a great issue to talk about today, but I think a lot of people will find this issue relevant to them when they hear what it is. And it has to do with child rearing. But the interesting angle here, it's about someone else's child we'll be talking about rearing and whether or not it's your responsibility and whether or not it's my responsibility or whether or not I should do something about it. Anyway, it's January 5th, 2012. Happy New Year for all of those of you who are just tuning in. If I haven't had a chance to say it to you yet, there are plenty of people I haven't had a chance to say Happy New Year to you. But it's Reese on the radio. The number is 347-308-8701. Again, 347-308-8701. Plenty of things are happening in the news. I don't think they're extremely exciting. I could get into the boring news that I would love to talk about, especially with this these recess appointments of Barack Obama, but I don't want to get into that right now. I'm going to see how the Senate and how the Congress is going to how they're going to respond to those things, because there's a lot going on. We already know who won the Iowa caucus, so that's over. Like, the big news is already passed, so there's kind of that suppression, you know, of news. It sort of goes in a down slide until something big happens this near the end of the week. More stories were more mournful. That poor family that had the Christmas Day fire in Connecticut. Those children were laid to rest. We had to deal with that. So there hasn't been a lot of exciting news, which is what most people are looking for people to regurgitate. Sometimes you got to take the boring news and you got to make it exciting. You got to blow it up, so to speak. You know, you have to make it exciting. And I'm not in the business of sort of making something exciting that clearly isn't. And those stories are more sad than anything. But I would like to bring up a story that we talked about right here on Reese on the Radio yesterday about the Oklahoma City mother protecting her 3-year-old when intruders tried to break into her home just 6 days after her poor husband passed away due to cancer. The mother protected her home, protected her. Everybody keeps talking about the 3-year-old child. She protected her 3-year-old child. Well, the most important thing is she protected her home. That is her job to do as a mother. You're supposed to do that whether or not you're a father, no matter what. Somebody breaks into your home, you pull out the jammy, as they say, in the hood. You pull out the gun, pull out the pistol, the tool, the ratchet, whatever it is that they're calling it today. And you smoke. milk something. There's no other way to put it. They break into your home, and, you know, whatever comes, comes. I mean, that's it. But there is an interesting angle to the story. For some of you who missed it, we'll play the story, and then I'll give you the development.
This young mother takes maternal instinct to a whole new level.
I walked over and got the 12-gauge. Went in the bedroom and got the pistol and put the bottle in his mouth, and then I called 911.
18-year-old Sarah McKinley killed a man, she says, to protect her 3-month-old baby.
I'm here by myself with my infant baby. Can I please get a dispatcher out here immediately?
Late on New Year's Eve, police say two men, one armed with a 12-inch hunting knife, were trying to break into her home outside Oklahoma City. McKinley recognized one of them as someone she thought was stalking her.
He was from door to door trying to bust in. They said I couldn't shoot him until he came in the door.
Are your doors locked? Yes, I've got two guns in my hand. Is it okay to shoot him if he comes in the store?
I can't tell you that you can do that, but you do what you have to do to protect your baby.
The teen mother killed the 24-year-old intruder the second he stepped inside. Police call the shooting justified.
You're allowed to shoot an unauthorized person that is in your home. The law provides you the remedy and sanctions the use of deadly force.
The second intruder turned himself in. McKinley was home alone that night because her husband just died of cancer on Christmas Day. While her son may grow up without his father, this is one little boy who will always know mom will do anything to protect him.
And that's pretty much the breakdown of the story. Mom will do anything to protect him. Now, I won't get into a couple of the comments made by the reporter who says that, you know, the cops say it was justified. If you listen to the tone of his voice, you know that he doesn't believe it. The cops say it was justified. We don't believe it. But, you know, whatever, they said it was. But the bottom line is that, you know, someone broke into this young lady's home and she shot him. 18 years old, grabbed two guns, a bottle, and a phone. Multitasked like a mother. And still managed to kill the guy. But there's an interesting development in the story. Turns out today, the accomplice in the story, who turned himself in, is now being charged with murder. According to the story, it says, although he did not fire a single shot, the 29-year-old Dustin Lewis Stewart is charged with first-degree felony murder in the incident because if someone dies during the commission of certain crimes, such as burglary, an alleged accomplice can be charged in the death, prosecutors in Oklahoma City have said. Now, that is a very interesting thing, that someone would be charged with murder even though they didn't pull the gun or shoot the person. But if you are with them, if you are an accomplice in the crime that they are committing and a person dies, then someone can be charged. Now, I thought about this for a couple of minutes after I read the story, and I thought, okay, so if I tell my friend, hey, man, we're going to go rob this house, and then I go in, or he and I go to the house, and he breaks into a window, and he goes through the window, and he ends up getting shot. I end up, well, in essence, I'm the ringleader, so I sent him to his death. So I'm being charged with murder. I guess that, to me, makes some sort of sense. But I have to play devil's advocate here. Do you think that the prosecution in this case is fishing? The number is 347-308-8701. Is the prosecutor fishing? Because someone has to be charged with the death of this person. It's as if they're saying in some way that the suspect, the villain in this case, breaking into the home, is a victim of some sort. JC, the producer, is with us. JC,
yeah.
I mean, do you understand where I'm saying? I understand that They're saying no, someone died.
I fully understand where you're coming from, but what if the shoe was on the other foot? Say, for example, the baby had gotten killed by accident. Oh, not even by accident, or the baby got killed, period. Now, which one of the two do you charge with the crime?
Well,
which of the two assailants do you charge with that crime?
Well, if she's holding a gun and they get the gun away from her or whatever, let's say she loses control of the gun.
Okay.
Because she's got two guns and a pistol. I mean, pardon me, two guns and a phone. She's holding a phone to her ear. She's got one gun in one hand, and she's got a big, giant shotgun in another. She fires the gun, the shotgun, and she loses her balance and fires the second weapon, and the son ends up getting shot. Then you can't charge her. I don't think you would. I think you'd charge the two suspects in that case that because of their actions...
Right, someone has died.
So, I mean, I understand that. I mean, if it had been the young child, God forbid, if it had been the young child, yes, someone would have had to pay for that. But what I'm saying here is that the accomplice is being charged with the crime as if to say that his accomplice...
He pulled the trigger.
Yeah, as if he pulled the trigger, and in some way there was a victim in this case. Once you commit a crime, or you're in the process of committing a crime... When do you, I mean, does the pendulum shift and he now becomes a victim? Because in essence, that's what the accomplice is being charged with. Being charged
well, if
with
somebody
murder.
Dies, then yeah, somebody's got to pay for it.
But
if somebody dies, somebody's got to pay for it.
I hate to use the term occupational hazard, but isn't that what this was? You tried to bring to a home, and therefore the hazard is you break into the home, somebody has a gun, and you end up dying. I mean, that's it. You know, okay, sarah, sarah, we're done. You know, whatever will be, we're done. You got the punishment that
no.
you deserve to the home.
No.
What,
he,
do you say no?
You have to be charged.
No, it doesn't make any sense. Because in essence, justice has been served. He broke into the home, the woman had a gun, and he was shot and killed. How in any, by any means, does a second person get, like, in other words, it's like, his death needs to be justified in any way. And in essence, yes, it was. He broke in to the home and he was killed. That's he wasn't murdered. You see what I'm saying? There's no the definition that they're using is murder in the first degree. There was no murder. He was a victim of his own actions. You can't charge somebody with that. And I'm not looking out for the accomplice. He's the scumbag.
No, by no means. But I mean okay, I can understand exactly where you're coming from, but in this instance, someone's died. Someone's going to have to pay for it. Why not the accomplice who planned out the operation from beginning to end?
Are we certain that he did that?
They had to have. You don't. Two guys don't randomly choose a house. I'm sure they know that her husband had died a week before.
Really?
I mean, if you think about it, if you think that there was a guy that was stalking her, well, personally, I think that there's a little more to that story, but that's something I don't want to get into. But I'm almost certain that there's a connection there somewhere that we're not hearing about, and we're probably not going to because the guy's dead.
Okay, that may indeed be true. I you know, there's probably other things that we're not hearing because the news is very limited. It's a two-minute story in the news, so we don't get the whole details.
2 minutes, a huge story. But listen, while we're on the subject, apparently it's a rash that's going on around the country.
What do you mean?
In Pensacola, Florida, a 36-year-old Tabitha Nussbaumer faced with a similar situation as McKinley. She was home alone with a 9-year-old son when an intruder armed with a bow and arrow entered her home demanding money. Nussbaumer, who also happens to be an auxiliary Florida Highway Patrol trooper, told the 24-year-old intruder that her money was in the vehicle outside trying to lure him away from her and her son.
Okay.
Well, when he headed out to the car to get the money, she managed to get a hold of her weapon, which happens to be a 9mm Glock. She then fired the weapon and she killed him. Guy named was Sean Harris.
So So, well, here,
and this was after she warned him to leave her once her weapon was in hand. But
right. In other words, she gave him fair warning, get away from me. He had the option to go and not lose his life.
Right, right. But the bow and arrow bandit, what he did was he disrobed as he tried to follow her out of her home, wrapped his arms around her, licking her face, and fondling himself.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now has this woman been charged with anything?
Absolutely not.
Well, and she shouldn't be. Because, okay, now you hear what it is that I'm saying. We're talking about the Oklahoma City 18-year-old mom who shot an intruder. There was an accomplice in the case who has now been charged with his death because he was an accomplice in the crime. And the woman, the mother, has not been charged, rightfully so, but the prosecutors are now charging the accomplice with first-degree murder. And the question is whether or not it's fair for the prosecutor to go after the accomplice. And I don't believe that that's 100% fair because he is not the person who fired the weapon. But in essence, we're treating the victim, I can't even call him a victim, the perpetrator died in his actions. He was committing a crime. If you are in the process of committing a crime and you die, I think that's it. Slate clean. He's dead. The woman shoots them and we're done. But for the prosecutors to then charge the accomplice with murder, I think that it's a fishing expedition. I think it's an unfair one. I know that they in some way want, you know, hey, somebody's dead, so someone has to be charged, and we can't charge the mother because she's in the right. But in that case, you leave it alone, and you charge the accomplice with what it is that he did, and that was breaking and entering, whatever the charges may be. But
well, breaking and entering, that resulted in the death. I mean, that's going to be the bottom line. It resulted in the death. There's similar drug charges. You pull over a car full of kids, and you find drugs in the car. Who do you charge, the driver, or do you charge all the kids?
Well, okay, fair enough. But I'm going to go back to a very, very sensationalized case that happened last year, and that's Dr. Conrad Murphy. See, Dr. Conrad Murphy, as many know, provided the propofol that Michael Jackson was taken, and he was charged with involuntary manslaughter and given 4 years. Now, that seems like a more reasonable charge for someone like this gentleman, because it was involuntary. He did not know that someone was gonna end up being shot and killed. I mean, if I was his lawyer, I would probably say that. But what I'm asking is whether or not this is some way extreme. So,
if not for nothing, it's a hell of a deterrent, and it'll deter others.
I think it will. I agree with that. I believe.
And I say make an example of them.
So you believe that what's going to happen here, and I see what's going to happen here, in this particular case, I think this right here is a landmark case. I think it's a landmark case for several reasons. One, because there are more and more people buying guns now to protect their homes, be it because of the economy, be it because of violent crimes, whatever it may be. But now you're going to have to think, if you're one of those perpetrators out there, about the crime that you commit or the crime that you decide to commit. And again, it baffles me. I just think the prosecutors are really, really fishing here. That's just me. But, you know, again, like you said about the gentleman with the bow and arrow who ended up dying, you know, we can't charge someone else for her shooting him, but, you know, let's say, okay, I'll give you a perfect example. When you talked about that story, let's say he had gone in with an accomplice, and the accomplice doesn't leave the home, only this bow and arrow bandit jumps out, starts licking her all over the face after she told him to leave, and she fires the weapon. We then charge the guy who didn't come outside, who didn't physically assault her. I mean, it almost seems ridiculous. It would be almost like splitting hairs.
Well, two birds of a feather flock together. They were doing their crimes together, Reese.
Well, again, I'm not taking the sides. I'm just saying this. Again, as I always do, I'm looking at this from a practical level. The accomplice is probably saying to himself, and I know he's saying, it's like, man, we didn't go in there to do anything other than scare her and take some money. Now I'm charged with first-degree murder. And I'm sure every guy who's in jail with this guy right now is saying to themselves, yeah, you know, I pulled this stunt before. I got to rethink this. Now, and so in that respect, I agree with you. There's probably going to be some people who are second-guessing themselves if they're going to commit these kinds of crimes. I mean, that's just where I'm coming from.
Right.
It sounds odd. It sounds odd for the prosecutor, I think, because when I heard about this story earlier, and the number's 347-308-8701, if you'd like to chime in, the case here, I think the prosecutors are turning a perpetrator into a victim. And as we talked about yesterday, that now there are criminals who are able to sue certain people protecting their own home because, you probably remember this. In the movie Liar Liar with Jim Carrey, there was the scene when his secretary was leaving him, and he's on the floor, Jim Carrey is on the floor begging her to stay. And she tells this story. She tells this story and she says, my best friend had an intruder break into her house. He fell on a knife and he cut himself. He ended up suing her friend for $10,000. And Jim Carrey, she goes, hey, what would you have sued for that amount? And Jim Carrey's response was, I would have gotten him 20. You know, it's like he broke into her house. He got injured breaking into her house and was able to sue her in the home. Now, of course, it's a movie, but I've seen cases like this where the perpetrator can sue the person for them being injured in their home. And that's, I find that baffling. It's almost like I think now because the prosecutor may have opened a can of worms that the victim's family, I'm using that word again, the perpetrator's family, might sue this 18-year-old girl for wrongful death. I mean, that you're opening up the floodgates because the prosecutors are already saying that someone is responsible for his death, and yes, we charge the accomplice, but now we're saying that we're opening up the floodgates for the perpetrator's family to sue somebody.
Okay, I can see your point there. I can see your point. However, I can't believe that you just admitted to all these listeners that you watch Jim Carrey movies.
Look, back in the day, who didn't watch the Jim Carrey movies?
You're the only one.
I watch movies all the time. I'm not the only
one. You're the only one.
He made a fortune. I'm not out of my mind.
Folks, 347-308-8701.
Yeah.
Recent radio.
It's Recent Radio. Give a call. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for saving me from myself.
Oh, my God.
Let's take a call at 347-308-8701. Who do we got on the line?
Your old friend Mary. How are you gentlemen doing this evening?
We're doing pretty good. Am I out of my mind, Mary? This guy is now being charged with murder in the first degree.
I have to say, for this time, I agree with you. I do not agree that this gentleman should be charged with first-degree murder or any murder, not even involuntary manslaughter, because the perpetrator, the deceased, one of the perpetrators, got what, I can't say what they deserved, but they got what the law states was coming to them if they entered someone's home that was armed. So why would you charge? The perpetrator should just be charged with attempted burglary or whatever they were attempting to do. I don't believe in any fashion that that gentleman should be charged with murder. There's no way.
And how do you feel about what I said about opening up the floodgates? The prosecutor is saying, by charging someone with murder, in essence, someone's responsible for his death. And that's what you look. The essence of the charge is to say someone is responsible for the death of this perpetrator. Therefore, charging the accomplice with first-degree murder, if I'm thinking as a civil lawyer, I'm going to the victim's family. I use the word victim again. But the perpetrator's family, I'm going, hey, listen, you've got a case. yeah, I know he was a scumbag. I know he tried to break into this woman's home and a three-year-old was there. But the prosecutor has already stated somebody needs to be held responsible for his death. You deserve some sort of, there should be some liability on someone's head, be it the girl or be it the accomplice. Now, the accomplice managed to make a $50,000 bail. And that means that someone had some money to put that up. So I think at this point, you know, forget about the floodgates. I think the dam is open for a civil case. That's what I think is going to happen. It couldn't be any other way.
Well, if a civil attorney wants to bring something against anyone, I can maybe see them bringing something against the accomplice in a civil lawsuit if they find that the accomplice should have been held responsible as a ringleader. But even then how? Who are we holding accountable? I mean, we must be accountable for our own actions. If Jimmy comes along and tells you, hey, I'm going to jump off the bridge, well, you should jump off the bridge with me. Are you going to jump off the bridge? No, you're not. And if you do, then, hey, so be it. That's on you.
Right. And you walk through that door. I don't know whether or not she warned him that she had a gun, but you walk through that door, and whatever happens when you walk into that home, you're at the mercy of that person when you walk into their domain. That's just the way that I look at it.
I feel the same exact way. But this time, I have to say that I agree with you.
No, it wasn't hard. Trust me, this one was an easy call.
What a revelation.
It's Reese on the radio. The number is 347-308-8701. Again, 347-308-8701. When we come back, we got to talk about the Chevy Volt. That's right. They've been recalled. Why were they recalled? 8,000 of them. This was Obama's baby. And we'll talk about why you're a moron if you're driving around in a Prius or a Leak or any one of those silly little hybrid cars. It's Reese on the radio.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer, Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz. There's Dr. Phil. There's Dr. Drew. There's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem. You deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on ReSun Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back. I am suffering from, like, some of the worst technical difficulties known to man, if you only knew. I'm trying to get this story that just came over the wire. Give me a minute, and I'm going to get it. And we'll get some audio for you in the next hour. We'll talk about it, but the number's 347-308-8701. It's Reese on the Radio. Now, I don't know about the rest of you and what you drive or what you like as a car. My biggest issue as of late or for the past couple of years have been hybrid cars. And I see these cars all the time, the Prius, the Leak, and most recently the Chevy Volt, which is a car that I can't stand. And most people would argue that I probably can't stand it because it's, you know, it's Barack Obama's, you know, big frontier into reusable energy and all that stuff. And, you know, his big argument about whether or not we need to find a new way to power everything. And this Chevy Volt, which was this hybrid car, that came out about 2 years ago, General Motors, of course. And they couldn't stop talking about how great this vehicle was. Can't wait, can't wait, can't wait till this vehicle comes out. It got like Motor Trend Car of the Year, I think, when it came out. Whatever those things. I don't think it's got J.D. Power, but I'm almost certain it got Motor Trend Car of the Year. And we know what that was about. That was about, you know, boosting, you know, Barack Obama's credibility, you know, because he says, oh, this is the wave of the future. He's telling everybody that this is the wave of the future. Now, here's the part that baffles me about why would this car be called the car of the year or the car of the future? Let me break down a couple of specs for you. For those of you who have a car and drive and who spend money on gas, try this on for size. For starters, the car only seats four. And when I say only seats four, you know how most cars, you could put a fifth person in the back. He'll sit in the little middle. They have a seatbelt for you. Not in the Chevy Volt. Chevy Volt's got that sort of dash that comes through the middle of the car. The console comes through the middle of the car in the front seat, goes all the way to the back seat. It means that there is no middle seat. So it only seats four. What's worse is the electricity to power up this car. You're going to be powering it from your home. So this, of course, is going to be an increase on your electric bill. Of course it is. Without a doubt. You know, you charge anything in your home, you know the deal. You got computers running, lights running, whatever. You're powering a car. Now, you power your car, the Chevy Volt, and you power it up to the maximum in the battery. You know, the battery's fully charged. And let's say you've got no money for gas. And I understand that most people do, but let's say you don't have any money for gas. With that electric unit, because there isn't any other place that you can plug it up except your home. There are no stations that you can go to and plug up your car. But you can only go 40 miles, period. So let's hope your job ain't more than 20 miles away. You go to your job, you're 20 miles there, you're 20 miles back, that's it. But, you know, families do more than just use their Chevy Volt to go to work. Say you're going to grandma's house. Grandma's house is maybe 46 miles, 47 miles. Well, thank goodness, the brilliant people over at General Motors, they put in a gas tank. But the gas tank only takes premium gas. That's right, folks. Premium gas. You know the price of premium gas today? Now, why wouldn't you make it a car that has, you know, unleaded regular? You could make it's not, but you have to have premium. So it's costing you even more money. Higher electric bill, higher gas bill. And the hell if you go further than 20 miles, you ain't coming back. But now there's another part to this whole story. What happens to these cars when they break down? Because every car does. If you've owned a car, you know they have. No car is perfect. It goes through wear and tear, potholes, weather, whatever. Overuse. Well, if the car breaks down, the wheels lock. That's it. Lock. That's it. You have to slide the car up a flatbed. You have to pull it up a flatbed. Wheels don't turn. And then there's the battery that this car runs on. Made in Korea. That means if the battery dies, you have to get a new battery from South Korea. You mean I can't buy it at Pep Boys? AutoZone? No, my friend. You got to pick it up over at your local Korean country to get a new car. That's what you have to do. So now it turns out that 8,000 of them have been recalled. And why? And why? Because when the car crashes, it turns out 3 days later, they catch fire. There's some sort of mechanism in the battery, which is, I believe, made with mercury and all types of something lithium. I don't know the technology. I could break that down for you, but that would be boring. Bottom line is that they're catching fire days after a crash. So let's say you bang into someone. I can still drive the car to work. I don't have another car. Let's say you're driving the car, you're taking it down to the dealership. And you go down to the dealership, and on your way there, poof, the whole thing catches on fire. JC, is this a tragedy?
Yeah.
What?
And it's not that easy.
Oh, please tell me.
No, okay. Now these battery operated cars, these alternative fuel vehicles, especially the battery operated ones. Each tire has its own engine.
That's right. That's the reason why they lock.
Right. And here's the problem: because they have their own engine, each one has its own battery. And it can't be towed on a steel flatbed. You have to find a flatbed, an aluminum body flatbed, which is very, very rare and costly.
Now, please explain this. An aluminum body flatbed?
Aluminum bodied flatbed.
So why does it have to be aluminum?
Because with the steel body flatbed and something with a mechanism, I can't exactly explain it. I'd have to get a mechanic on to explain it, but from what I've been told is that with a steel body flatbed, it'll screw up the computer.
Ah, that's right, because the entire thing's pretty, it's a computerized car.
Yeah, it'll screw up the computer. I learned this when I was doing logistics over at Triple 80 Auto Club, when these hybrids first came out.
So you're saying that someone buying this car, in the event of some damage or some wear, that there will be even more complications that will put them, I mean, come on, if you're going through, I mean, I'm in New York, if you're going through the Lincoln Tunnel or the Holland Tunnel, and this car, you know, stalls on you, I mean, forget about it. Forget about the traffic that you'll create, but trying to get
that
car. Walk
away from it, you're screwed.
Yeah, walk away from it, right? You got to walk away.
You've got no choice but to walk away.
But what do you think about the whole aspect of you buy this car, it only seats four, and you'll only get 40 miles to the charge?
Let me tell you, I don't believe in any of these alternative fuel vehicles, period. Let me tell you, back in the mid-90s, when they came out with the alternative natural gas vehicles.
Okay.
Those eggshells came with a fiberglass tank that breathed while you were driving. It would contract. It would contract in and out as though it was breathing.
Oh.
And it has metallic joints on it to reinforce it. You need to hit one sharp rock to pierce the tank, or one sharp piece of metal. Say, for example, somebody's alternator craps out of their car, falls out.
Sure.
Or parts of the engine start falling. If you roll over that with a natural gas vehicle, you're toast.
And you mean that literally and figuratively.
Exactly. You're damn right. but with the hybrids and electronics, no, you couldn't get me to buy it. Give me a big old-fashioned gas-guzzling 1996 Caddy Coupe DeVille.
You know what I find interesting? The number one selling vehicle in America is the Ford F-150 truck. Isn't that amazing? The number one selling vehicle in the United States. And we're talking years running, and they're
look who's buying them. Look who's buying them.
But again,
we don't use them in the hood.
Well, it doesn't matter. The point is that people are buying larger trucks, and these cars. A lot of people don't know this about hybrid cars and fuel-efficient cars. The one thing, or the most important thing you must do in order to make a car fuel-efficient is make it lighter. That means that, you know, it's torque. It means how much the engine has to pull or push, for that matter.
Right.
And in order to make that car use less gas mileage, you have to make the car lighter. And for every 1,000 pounds, or pardon me, for every 500 pounds, I think, you take off. I don't remember what the statistic is, but I'm almost certain it's 1,000 pounds. But for every 1,000 pounds or something that you make a car lighter, you put more lives at risk. So I mean, look at these people who are driving around in smart cars. Do you see these little things? You know, the little two-seaters? That look like bugs. Like, who would drive in that?
Could you see me in a smart car?
Well, no, I could not, JC. I could not. I wasn't going to go there. But I'm saying, Why would you put anyone in that smart cart? I mean, I think that, I mean, I understand that everyone, why try to make us more European? Those cars are all over the road, and when they crash into each other, they probably do minimal damage to the cars because they're all small and they don't go so fast. But in America, we have people who have large SUVs and larger cars and foreign makes, whatever it may be. They're going to destroy that car, if not the life inside. And I don't understand.
You're absolutely right on that one.
I don't understand. And more
you're right.
People, the only people who they don't talk to, JC, which I've noticed about this, the only people they don't talk to are auto mechanics. They don't talk to them. They don't talk to people in the towing industry. And they don't talk to people in AAA. They don't talk to those people when they talk about these cars. They're a menace. And I'm glad that this recall happened, although it's been minimal coverage. But I need this, you know, the story to get more traction. These people are fools putting themselves, their families, and their lives on the line. And I don't think that they're ever going to get it until, you know, something like this, if not on a grander scale, does. And I just don't understand it. The number's 347-308-8701. Again, 347-308-8701. If you got an opinion, please give us a call or give us an email at reesontheradio@yahoo.com or log on to reesontheradio.com. You can get archives. You can check out the link that goes directly to our show on blogtalkradio.com. Yesterday's show is already there on blogtalkradio/reesontheradio. And you can join in on the conversation and everything else that we're talking about. I'm going to get the info on Newt Gingrich and the comments that he made just recently. I feel like I should go, if I can, I'm going to see if I can take a couple of minutes. I'm going to go on a break. I'm going to try to get the audio because I'd love to hear what it is that he'd have to say about blacks and the welfare system because they're saying he's drawn some ire behind this. So I'll work on that right now. We'll take a break. If you'd like to chime in, please do, 347-308-8701. We're right here at Teresa on the Radio. And, you know, we'll be right back. Okay? Stick around. And don't forget, it's Therapy Thursday. It's Therapy Thursday. It's not so much a story, but it's kind of something that's been bugging me for a couple of weeks now. So,
what doesn't bug you?
Thanks, JC. Everything. Put him on hold. We'll be back. They're calling again. Scrambled egg all over my face. What is a boy to do? Good night, everybody.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer, Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative, rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun. Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare. ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby, twinkle, twinkle.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back. The number is 347-308-8701. That number again, 347-308-8701. You can log on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can send us an email if you like at ReeseOnTheRadio@yahoo.com. Thank you for checking out the show if you're out there. Newt Gingrich is in the news, and I ran out to try to get this audio, but I have the story. And I'm actually glad that this was brought to my attention. The story is going to be mangled by the mainstream media. And the reason why the story is going to be mangled by the mainstream media is because the mainstream media got it wrong. I think I'm off the air. Hoping that we're still back on the air. Having a little bit of a technical difficulty today. Oh, my apologies, folks. We're going to have to take another break. If you can hear me out there,
Just give us a second. We'll figure out the technical difficulties.
Please stand by.
Please
stand by. Reese on the Radio will return in a few moments. We're just handling some business in the background. But don't worry, Reese on the Radio will return in a moment. Hey, I said we'll be back. Relax. Where are you going? What, are you logging off? I don't, relax, okay?
All right, we figured it out. My apologies to you folks again. Unfortunately, when you're online, that's what it is that happens. We lose a lot. Anyway, it happens. Anyway, I want to get into this Newt Gingrich story. The story, let me give you the headline, coming from CBS.com, mainstream media. Liberals, as usual, CBS News. Headline reads, Gingrich singles out blacks in food stamp remarks. Now, listen to that headline, singling them out. Gingrich is talking about blacks and food stamps, according to the report. Then we get to the meat of the story. Just days after the Republican presidential to keep for Salix on debt reform, Newt Gingrich called Africa to be thin on food stamps, despite the fact that black recipients in the food stamp program. Here's the most important part of the story. Gingrich, during an appearance in Plymouth, New Hampshire, spoke about remarks he would theoretically make if invited to speak to the NAACP, a group that is singled out to African Americans or people of color, for that matter. And that's the deal. Blacks, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And Newt Gingrich said that they would speak to their advocates, the NAACP, and talk to blacks about their dependence on food stamps. That's what he said. I'm prepared. If the NAACP invites me, I'll go to their convention and talk about why the African-American community should demand paychecks and not be satisfied with food stamps. That's what I'll tell black people at their black forum. So, a group that singles itself out for being a group that supports or advocates problems in the black community. That's right. Problems in the black community. He said, I'm prepared to go tell those black folks. I'll go to their convention and talk about why the African-American community should demand paychecks and not be satisfied with food stamps. That's what he said. Now, we're coming to the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll talk about this and exactly why the mainstream media, as usual, tries to spin this as a racist comment. And, of course, we'll have more. We've got plenty of stuff coming up right here. It's Therapy Thursday. Stick around. Sorry about the technical difficulties. Please forgive me. I promise you we'll work them out. And I thank you for logging on and listening to the show. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio, 347-308-8701. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and I know you've got an opinion, so give yours. The number 347-308-8701. 347-308-8701, right here on Reese on the Radio.
Ooh, love hurts.
Yes, love hurts. It can hurt emotionally, but more important, it can also hurt you physically. It can hurt you in a way which nobody who owns a hot tub and lives in California can afford to be unaware of. Yes, I'm talking about California hot tub rectal gonorrhea. This painful, incurable disease can make an enjoyable soak in a hot tub with family, friends, and dog into a literally unforgettable experience. If you catch California hot tub rectal gonorrhea, not only will you walk around feeling like you're about to pass a twisted sardine can lid, you'll also smell like a pile of burning tractor tires. So don't jump out of the frying pan and into the hot tub, because if you get California hot tub rectal gonorrhea, it'll really burn your ass.
This has been a public service message brought to you by the Citizens Against CHTRG Foundation. California hot tub rectal gonorrhea. We're not going to take it sitting down.
Hello, Lois. This is Mike. I'm the personnel director here at your husband's work.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm fine. And how are you?
Fine.
Lois, are you sitting down?
Yes.
Well, I have some bad news.
What do you mean bad news? Bob's okay, isn't he?
Well, actually, that's why I called to talk to you. It's about Bob, and I know that he's been an employee here for a very long time, but I'm afraid we're going to have to let Bob go.
What do you mean? Wait, that's not very fair. He's been very loyal to you.
Look, I can understand you feeling that way.
Feeling that way? You don't understand. We just had a baby.
No, I understand that.
This is a very hard time to do this kind of a thing.
Yes, it is, but Bob has kind of forced our hand on this.
Why are you firing him?
We caught him doing his secretary on his office desk.
Oh, that son of a bitch!
Look, I know you're upset.
Upset is not the word. That stupid, rotten son of a bitch. I can't believe this.
He's on his way home right now, and he's going to need your support.
Support my head! I'm going to change the locks on the door. I'm throwing his outside on the front lawn. He can just have it all. I'm not even going to be here when he gets back. And now, I don't feel so bad about his brother.
Lois. It's a joke. Your husband put us up. It's your birthday.
Happy birthday!
This is Stephen Hawking, and when I'm not solving the mysteries of the world, I listen to Reese on the radio on dogtalkradio.com.
What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Grab it!
Hey, I'm a little man.
It's
quite a snow.
And everywhere that Mary
went,
the
man
was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Welcome back, guys. It's Reese on the radio. It's Therapy Thursday. Don't worry, we're gonna get to Therapy Thursday. Just got a lot of stuff going on right now.
They're calling again.
It's breaking news with Newt Gingrich. Apparently, Newt Gingrich told some people in Plymouth that he would single out the African-American community by telling them they need to get off food stamps. I don't even know how that makes sense to the press. But if you're just joining us, the number's 347-308-8701. Newt Gingrich gave a speech talking to reporters. And they say that Gingrich may be asked to speak to the NAACP. And he was quoted as saying, "I'm prepared. If the NAACP invites me, I'll go to their convention and talk about why the African-American community should demand paychecks and not be satisfied with food stamps." The former speaker has made a habit of calling President Obama the food stamp president. Now, just to give you some background, even though it's not reported here until the end of the story, is that food stamps in this country have food stamp use, the SNAP program, has risen to astronomical levels. In fact, it's a record. It's a record. And the CBS article waits until the last paragraph. Well, second to last paragraph. The actual line is, the use of food stamps in America has continued to climb in recent years. What's recent? Recent would be in the last 2-3. And it hit an all-time high to nearly 45 million in 2011. So referring to Barack Obama as the food stamp president is accurate. And anyone who makes an association to food stamps and blacks, that's your racism. But Newt Gingrich, in context, is talking about what? He's talking about speaking to the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and how he's telling that community who has suffered. I don't care whether or not they don't use food stamps as much as whites. There's no National Association for the Advancement of White People. If he's going to speak to that convention, he's going to be talking to an all-black crowd. He's going to be talking to the people who are there who happen to be black. But saying that Gingrich cannot discuss African-Americans and their use of food stamps is preposterous. And I don't care what anybody says. This is CBS doing nothing more than a smear campaign. And I said it to you before, and I'll say it to you again. The race war is on. 2012. It is going to be a race war. If you want this black president to remain the president of the United States, you're going to have to attack his opponents on the basis of race. If you want to rally black people back into the polls the way that they did in 2008, you are going to do that by telling them that it is detrimental, that it is the most important election of your life if you do not keep this black man in there because whitey don't want him there. And they will take every comment that white politicians make, and they will make it racist. They will take the war to the ignorant groups, the ignorant members of those groups. They will take it to the ignorant Latinos, the ignorant Hispanics, the ignorant Latinos, the ignorant whatever they're being called today. And they will take it to the ignorant blacks. That's right. I said it. The ignorant blacks. And a place like CBS News knows who they're targeting. Ignorance. They know that a soundbite means nothing. They know that they can twist the words of Newt Gingrich and say, oh, look, he's singling out blacks because that's what the headline says. He says, talking to the NAACP, he'll bring up food stamps. But no, they say Gingrich singles out blacks in food stamp remark. Even though in context he's talking about speaking to an all-black group. I'm going to go to their headquarters, the NAACP. I'm going to talk to them, and I am going to tell them, black people of the NAACP, please tell the people who support your group that I need them to support paychecks over food stamps. But the race war has begun. Andrea Mitchell saying that Iowa is too white, too evangelical. To do what? Are they saying that they're too white, too evangelical to reelect the black president? It doesn't matter that they voted for him in the 2008 election 9 points, 9 points over John McCain from Arizona, white man from Arizona. It doesn't matter. But in this election, they're worried. Iowans may not vote for him, probably because of his record. But if we keep pushing the too white, he's black. The too white, he's black. Ain't white like you. Black. That's where you're going to hear these stories. So the headline is disingenuous. Gingrich did not single out blacks in his food stamp remark. He said, speaking to the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Hey, the hell if those people aren't singling themselves out. They're the National Association for the Advancement of Themselves. Not all people. It's not the NAAAP. It's the NAACP. They're not looking for the advancement of all people. It's the advancement of colored people. And he said that when he talks to them, he is going to tell them flat out, hey, Negroes, what do you want, a paycheck? You want food stamps? Now, Newt Gingrich can't do that, but I can. Because that would be, you know, forget about it, it would be a firestorm. But why does the press do that? Why would the press turn around and mince his words to say that he singled them out? Because this is what they do, ladies and gentlemen. This is what they do. Forget about whether or not Barack Obama's policies have helped this country. That means nothing to the grand scheme of things. The grand scheme is to keep him in office. For what? Oh, when he's gone, he's gone. But we need him there, you know, 4 more years, you know? We didn't prove enough with his first election. Yes, we know he failed. Yes, we know. We know he didn't do well. But we need him there another 4 years. Get him there another 4 years. 347-308-8701 is the number. It's Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. But that's what it is that they're arguing. So I wish James was out there and he would call. Because he couldn't defend this. This is a disingenuous headline. He didn't single on anybody. He's asked if he would speak to the NAACP, what would he tell them? He would tell blacks at the NAACP, get off food stamps. You don't want to be on food stamps. You want a paycheck. See, with a paycheck, you get a raise. So there's this thing I always talk about called COLA, C-O-L-A, the cost of living adjustment. A lot of people know what this is. I love referencing COLA. You see, when you're on food stamps, when you're on the government dole, and prices go up, what happens? Now, if we put this into brass tacks, let's take small numbers. If you can live today on $5 a week, and you receive that $5 from the federal government, and you get that $5 for a year, and you're making your ends meet. You're paying your rent with $1. You're buying food with the second dollar. You're paying your bills with the third dollar. You're paying for childcare with the fourth dollar. The last dollar, you have to do other things, whatever it may be. Now, it's costing you $1 to do all of those things. $1. Every bill that comes, it's $1. And you're getting that money from the government. And they ensure that you get that $5 every week. Now, inflation, prices do go up. Let's say 5 years later, the prices go up. And you're already receiving from the government your $5 a week. But the prices go up. So when you go to the supermarket, or you go to pay your bills, or your child care, those numbers go up because of inflation, because people have to get paid more. You find out that everything you paid, the first thing you paid, your rent, went up to $1.05. Your food went up to $1.10. Your child care went up to $1.15. That means that you need more money. And that means that you have to then sanction the government to give you more money. Right after 5 years. Now think about that in contrast with the job. When you work at a job, you get a bump in pay based on what? On you. What you do. What you accomplish. What you fulfill. How important you are to the company. You get that raise. You get those benefits. You get that bonus. You get all those things that happen when you have a job. All of that increases. See, you control the purse strings then. So when inflation goes up, you make more money. You know what? It's getting a little more expensive out there. You know what? Hey, John, can I get some overtime? Sure. Bill, you having some problems? Yeah, I just need to make some little extra money. You know, little Johnny's making Johnny's joined the football team, and you know we got to buy some equipment and what things. So I got to work a couple of extra hours. You do. But see, those things you can't do to the government. You can't call Barack Obama and say, hey, Barack, Johnny's joined the football team. I'm going to need some extra money for uniforms. No. It's not going to happen. You have to wait for government to adjust the cost of living for you to get on the dole. So, see, in a job, you control how much money you make by putting an effort, by doing the work. But you're eliminating that. You're eliminating all of that. And why are you doing it? You're doing it because you don't want these people to go out there and go get a job. You want them dependent on the government. Now, why would anybody want people who couldn't afford certain things to be dependent on the government? Well, it's very simple. Control. Control. Look at the SNAP program. In the SNAP program, the food stamp program, is being suggested in New York. Michael Bloomberg. They're suggesting that people on food stamps or on the SNAP program can't buy sugary sodas and drinks. They're telling you that you can't buy those things. We give you the money. We control you and what you eat. The healthcare program, the 2,000 plus pages of the Obamacare, says that a bureaucrat can come into your home if your child goes to the hospital too often. Because whatever it may be, diabetes, weight gain, heart conditions, whatever it is, a bureaucrat from Washington can come in and say, hey, why is Tiffany overweight? She's been at the hospital 4 or 5 times this year. What's going on? They can come into your house and they can look inside your cabinets. What are you feeding her? And the reason why they can do that, and read it, it's in the healthcare bill. If you haven't read it, I have. I was in jail and I read it. But you read the healthcare bill and sure enough, it tells you that if the government is paying the price, they what? They can be cost effective. You can't do the things you used to do. The things that you did when you were free, that's right, I said it, free. When you made your own pay, you worked on your job, and you smoked cigarettes when you wanted to, and you went and drank when you wanted to, and you ate all your sugary foods and got fat and overweight. Well, now you ain't working. Now you're on the government dole. And now everything you do, I control. Everything you eat, everything you smoke, you won't smoke no more. You won't eat no more. You'll do nothing until I say it's okay for you to do. Because I'm not going to spend any more money as a government for you to do whatever it is you want. And that's called the absence of freedom, ladies and gentlemen. That's the fact. JC, am I off the rocker or what? JC, you there? Okay, no, he's not. I got an echo. Somebody tell me, Mary, am I off the rocker here?
It's not all the way. But you also have to think about okay, people who are not everybody, but people who are receiving government assisted funds, food stamps, Section 8, whatever, which is all of our tax dollars, or a portion of our tax dollars. What kind of jobs can the – I understand that you're saying, oh, you go get a job, you control, you can get cost of living adjustments to your pay. Not every company offers cost of living adjustments to people's pay. And what kind of jobs can a lot of those people actually get? It would be great if all of those people were
– But Mary, hold on. The fact is that with any job, you know, you do your job and you go above and beyond, you get – incentives, you get a bump in pay, you get a raise, be it a quarter, 50 cents, or a dollar. You work a certain amount of time and you get a pay. Hey, you know what? You've been here a certain amount of time, you get a bump in pay. And the reason why companies do that is either one of two reasons. Their revenue is huge, their profits are huge, and they can, of course, reward their employees. The one way you keep an employee is to ensure that they get raises and incentives. That's the way you keep employees. You know, if you never ever give an employee a raise, you lose employees. But You have a high turnover rate when you don't do that. But what I'm saying is that you keep those employees because you keep giving them those incentives, raise and pay. You're never going to get that kind of incentive from the federal government. But what the government will do is they will limit the things that you want to do. There's no vacation on welfare. You ain't.
Yes, there is. There's a 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week vacation on welfare.
Well, no, I understand what you're saying, but you know, there's no, when families work, they can save money to go to Walt Disney World, to go to the Grand Canyon, you know, to go to Yellowstone. You're not
getting a 10-cent raise on an $8 an hour job.
No. See, you're talking about very, very limited people, but the bottom line is that you control.
But those are the people that 9 times out of 10 are on welfare.
But they're never ever going to be able to control their purse strings on the government dole. JC, what do you think? Oh, JC went back on hold. My point is you.
How about? Is it in New York? I think it's in New York. The mayor of New York wants to make everybody that is getting government assisted funds, or mothers or whomever, get have drug tests taken.
Well, actually, that was another state. That was actually Florida, and that failed miserably because they said they wanted to make sure that the people who were getting public assistance were not on drugs. That was in Florida, and in fact, someone called me about that and said how that failed. I think out of all the people they tested, only 2 people ended up using drugs, and it was costing taxpayers even more money to give the drug test. But you're absolutely right. Now, that's ridiculous. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is...
I don't think that that's ridiculous.
No. You cannot assume that the people who are on welfare, or anybody for that matter...
It's not an assumption. You're not assuming, but... It would be a good way to eliminate a lot. There are a lot of people that are on welfare because they are getting high. They can't keep a job, so they're spending our tax dollars, for those of us that work every day. They're giving those government funds to the crack dealer.
Fair enough. But my initial question was, Newt Gingrich is right. That African Americans need to understand that being on the government dole is not a good thing for their future. It can't be. JC, you back on?
Everybody
yeah, here, but
needs to
listen.
Understand that. Not just African Americans. It's everybody.
No. Again, we can't we can't make this an African American thing because Newt Gingrich is talking about speaking to the NAACP. He didn't single out blacks until the question said, what would you say to the NAACP? And that is a separatist or a secular group. And a secular group that says that they are for they're the Association for the Advancement of Colored People, he's talking directly to them and directly about them on the issues. So we can make this a black issue, and it's not. And, JC, you had a point, because I know you said 48% of blacks versus 59% of whites?
Right. On the SNAP program. However, but you know, he was suckered into the question.
Oh, certainly.
But being especially a politician that's up for the presidency of the United States, he should have made the statement a lot more broad, or it wouldn't appear the way that it does.
How so, JC? He's asked about speaking to the NAACP.
He should have said something to the effect that anyone who's on the SNAP program, anyone.
No, it's ridiculous. If you're asking what would you say to the NAACP, and then it's taken into context that he singled them out, I mean, that's a lure. That's a gotcha.
That's a lure. That's a gotcha. But listen, he's running for president. He's hoping to run for president. But he should have made the statement a lot broader than what he did. I mean, how do you get caught in that trap and you're running for president?
JC, if that's the case, then I'm willing to make this argument. Okay, we'll take a break, and when we come back, I want you to consider this argument. Because Maxine Waters said, and I quote, part of the Congressional Black Caucus, that she was upset that Barack Obama was visiting with white towns or white people and not going to black communities. So you're telling me that it's okay for Maxine Waters to isolate or to say that blacks needed to be, I guess, attended to and to segregate them, but when Newt Gingrich does it, it's considered racist. And I think that's a joke.
That's a racist statement.
Okay.
On her part.
I couldn't agree more. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll discuss it more. It's Reese on the Radio.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer, Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
It's Reese on the radio. We're back. I'm getting a couple of text messages. I can't believe I alienated people yesterday about the whole equal pay argument. I don't know. I may have to bring that back up because it actually got people talking about it. But, you know, whatever. That's what happens. It's Reese on the radio at 347-308-8701. Thank you for tuning in and listening. I see you out there checking out the show. It's my pleasure to have you there and listening in. When we were took the break, we were talking about Newt Gingrich. And they're saying Newt Gingrich singled out African-Americans talking about welfare. I don't even, you know, I wish it wasn't going to be about race. This is the reason why I wanted Herman Cain to be the candidate, because then that racism, you'd see it. You'd see the vitriol. They would call Herman Cain a Uncle Tom. You know, as Michael Eric Dyson said in one interview, and those of you who know Michael Eric Dyson said that Herman Cain says the things to curry white favor. And if you listen to most people, they act like, you know, they always act like African-Americans live in a different planet. And if you pay attention to why they do it or when they do it, you'll understand where I'm coming from. They think black people live in a completely different world. And mentioning that African-Americans are on food stamps is, you know, some sort of taboo subject, which is bullcrap. You know, how is it in any way talking about African-Americans on food stamps a bad thing? Most African Americans will tell you that they're sick and tired of being on the government dole. They can't find jobs. Government's not doing what it is that they need to do, because most of them, you know, are expecting the government to do for them. But when they don't succeed, who do they blame? The government. So here's a guy saying, look, we failed you, black people. We failed you. And we're going to We're going to find you paychecks. We're going to find you jobs. You'll get out and you make your own money. Now, we're not talking about, you know, McDonald's jobs, which Barack Obama was lauding as a great deal 2 years ago. Couldn't stop talking about how McDonald's was hiring. But before he became president, he was talking about how people shouldn't have McDonald's jobs. We don't want to give people a McDonald's job. But then they find out McDonald's is hiring all those people. Oh, that's a great thing. Look at McDonald's. Look at what they're doing. It's always a double standard. It's always back and forth. It's always flippity-floppity. But Newt Gingrich did the right thing. He said the truth. And the media, that's the one thing that they don't want. They don't want the truth. They don't want Newt Gingrich saying that black people need to get off the dole, because to the liberal media, black person should be on the dole. Black person should be taken care of by government. Their reasons are very obvious. Slavery. Yeah, that's what we should do. We should take from the rich and we give to the poor, especially blacks in this country. You know, they don't have to work. I mean, come on. Even Bill Clinton vetoed the workfare bill twice. Newt Gingrich wanted to get people, you know, off welfare and on workfare. Get them off the dole and get them into jobs. But when it came to Barack Obama, what happened? Probably not Barack Obama, I apologize, Bill Clinton. He vetoed it twice. But now look up the record of William Jefferson Clinton today, and they'll tell you, oh, Bill Clinton's welfare reform, he changed the whole scope for African Americans. He did things that helped them get off welfare. They never mentioned that he vetoed it twice. Never. And that's what it is that the liberal media does. Now, Newt Gingrich says that we want to get them paychecks. What's so bad about him saying that? What's so horrible about him saying, I'm going to go to the NAACP and I'm going to say, hey, listen, I think it's important for the African-American community to get an opportunity to earn a decent wage, to earn a decent living, to be able to take care of their families. That's what I would tell them at the NAACP. I think that this president is a food stamp president. I think he's making it easier and more accessible for people to get on welfare. I think that's what he's done as a president of the United States. The numbers speak for themselves. And as J.C. quoted earlier, J.C. said 48% of blacks are on welfare versus 59% of whites. And if you look at those numbers, they're 211 million African Americans. That's right. 211 million whites. I apologize. I got that number wrong. 211 million whites and only 38 million blacks. But look at the number. If there are only 38 million African Americans and 48% of the people on welfare who are black, that's an astronomical number. The number would be, what's the African American unemployment rate in this country? For 38 million, there's over 16% unemployment for African Americans. Out of 38 million, that's an astronomical number. If you're just looking at the black community, break down that 16% of 38 million. That's an astronomical number. And again, it's the math, stupid. It's the math. You don't like the math, but the math is there. It don't lie. What's that Jay-Z said? Men lie, women lie, but numbers don't. Well, numbers don't lie. And if there are 38 million African Americans and 16% of them are unemployed, that's an astronomical number. Anybody want to do the math? I mean, just pull out a calculator. Anybody, call me, email me. The number is 347-308-8701. Or email me at researchradio@yahoo.com. Give me the number. 38 million people. Give me 16% of that number and tell me how many people in the black community are out of work. That's all I want to know. What's that number? Get that number to me, please. And I can throw on a calculator. I'll be honest with you, I'm not great at math, so I'm probably not going to figure that out. I mean, what is it, 38 million? Let me see if I can do that. 38, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, that's 38 million. And what do I do? Divide it by 16% or divide it by 0.16? Is that what I do? I think that's what I do. I don't know how to do this. If I got this number right, if I'm doing this correctly, somebody correct me if I'm wrong here. But that looks like a horrible number. That doesn't look like the number that it's supposed to be. No, I can't be right. That's an astronomical number. That looks like over 2.3 million people. Somebody clear it up for me. I don't know. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. I don't know exactly what percentages would be. But let's take, you know, if we take 3,800, right? I think that's the way it works. If we took 3,800 and went 16%, I think that we work that way, whatever it is. And you can double the number that way. Somebody help me out. But that's a crap load of people in the African-American community. And saying that he's going to talk to the NAACP about that is a smart thing. What else are you going to tell African Americans when you go to the NAACP? What do they want? What do you want, Ben Jealous, the head of the NAACP? What do you want? What do you want the Republicans to do for blacks? I'd love to know. I don't think that we could appease the African American community and definitely the NAACP. I don't think that we can. I think just want more and more and more and more and more and more and more, and they want it from the government. And that's the truth. If you will look at the NAACP, you look at any one of these groups, the only thing that they want and the only people they ever, ever scream at that they want more from is the federal government. We want programs. We want work programs. Forget about the school system. We don't want the school system to improve education in the African-American community. Why? Because kids keep dropping out. Teachers keep their job even though they have an 85% dropout rate. So how do we solve that? We say, hey, listen, school ain't working. African-Americans ain't going to school. So you know what? Since they're not going to school, they're not getting an education, and they got no chance of going to college because they're being born into poverty, let's get the government to pick up the tab after the fact. So go to grade school, go as far as high school as you can, and then drop out. Because you can't do the work. It doesn't matter if you graduate from one of these high schools, you're not going to be able to get one of those jobs. And your parents can't afford for you to go to college, much less community college. So government, if they get a high school diploma, let's get them into some job. Let the government do it. Let the government get them employed. More government jobs. And who's going to pay for those government jobs? Oh, those people who made money, the taxpayer. Well, I mean, come on. Who did you think would have paid? So the whole thing is to keep the community down. The job of the federal government, especially for liberals, is to keep an entitlement society dependent on themselves, dependent on the government. We don't want them to have a damn thing. They need us. We need to keep reminding them that the rich and the whites in this country don't want you to have anything. Just keep us elected. We'll get those rich bastards. We'll get all the money. And we'll just trickle it down to you. And we'll get you that money, and you could buy your TVs and your PlayStations. You could pay your rent, pay your mortgage. You live off them. That's what the government wants. That's what this liberal agenda is all about. Keeping you permanently dependent on them. And you can't make a move. You can't make a decision. George Soros did it best a couple of years ago. George Soros was brilliant. He goes into Corona, Queens, a large Latino community, and tells that community, hey, can't pay for school supplies at the end of the summer? Come on down. I got $200 for everybody who come down, and I'll get you $300 of school supplies for your kids. Now, what do you think the purpose of doing that was? Hi, what's your name? Consuela? Hi, Consuela. Hi, here's your $300. Can we get some personal information from you? Yes, your name, your address. Yes. How many kids do you have? Are you a registered voter? Well, I want you to know that George Soros and MoveOn.org, they made this possible for you. Can we get your vote in 2010 for the midterm elections? Consuela says, absolutely, you definitely can. Just give me my $300 so that I can go buy some books for my child, Juanita. And you're hooked. That's what George Soros does. Listen. Consuela, we've got an agenda. Now, I understand you and Juanita, you're going through tough times. Remember, I'm a friend of old big guy, Barack Obama. You like him, don't you?
Oh, yes, we love him.
Well, he made this possible, Consuela. Just sign there on the dotted line, and we'll make sure that you get your trapper keeper, your number two pencils, your rulers, your projectors, whatever it is that you need. Don't worry about that. I'm George Soros. I'm a billionaire. It's not going to cost me a dime. I'll just write this off. Barack Obama will find out that I spent, you know, $4 or $5 million on you Latinos in Corona. I get 35-40% of that back anyway. No big deal to me. But we got your vote, right?
Absolutely, Mr. Soros.
without a doubt. Thank you so much. And that's what they do. And they keep you on the dole. What do you think Consuelo's doing the next year? Juanita needs to go back to school. Where is George Soros? Where is he? Oh, he'll be back, sweetheart, during the next election cycle. When he needs your vote the most. And those votes are being bought. So the rest of you who are sitting out there don't seem to understand how this works. It's as simple as that. You think I'm out of my mind? You really think I'm out of my mind? You think I'm going off the deep end? Check it out for yourselves. I did the research for you, folks. I know what's happening. Check out moveon.org. Find out who the benefactor is. Find out whether or not that Greek Mr. George Soros has ever made sure that a Republican got into office. That billionaire is on the top 25 list of Forbes billionaires. Look at your man Mark Zuckerberg, the owner of Facebook. Huh? Look at how Steve Jobs and Microsoft, the war that they had. Because Bill Gates is an Obama supporter. Look at the attacks Bill Gates did on Apple. Read Steve Jobs' biography, where he talks about the Obama administration and how awful he was to the business world, and how Barack Obama destroyed or almost destroyed his company. Now, when I say destroyed, I mean he went after him at the behest of his enemies, Bill Gates at Microsoft. Oh, you didn't know that? Well, this is what they do. So they need you to be the indentured servants of the Democratic Party. We just want your vote. Keep us in power. We control the money. We're in power. We control the money. We control what it is that happens in our world financially. And we've paid you back. We'll pay you back with welfare, with unemployment, with that government aid. And guess what there, Consuela? You don't have to work a day in your life. A job? What you talking about? You get paid for your vote. It's your job. Your job is to go down there and stand on that long line and vote for the letter D every time. That's what it is that you're supposed to do, Consuela. And don't worry about it there, young lady. You go on there and you get your number two pencils and your protractors and your trapper keepers. And you keep it moving and we'll see you in November. Hey! Call me crazy. They think I'm nuts. Mary, come on. I'm sorry. Hold on. I apologize. Mary, come on. Say something. You got to disagree with me. I know you do. You think I'm off my rocker. I know that. Oh, she's not even there. My bad. JC, come on. You got to disagree with me. I know you disagree with me. JC?
To a degree, I really can.
Well, you can't.
I look for points, and it's hard. You're pretty spot on this one.
Well, finally.
And you know, I hate to give you credit.
I know I'm spot on. It's insanity. But they keep, remember, you're never, ever going to walk away from the hand that feeds you. And I know that black people have a problem with hearing that, but that's what's happening. You're a dog. You're a cat.
You know what I had a problem with?
What?
I had a problem with your Consuela.
What?
She sounded like her name should be Olga. She should be wearing a babushka. She didn't sound Spanish at all.
No. I said Consuela because we're talking about Corona Queens, which is a largely populated Spanish community. That's the reason why I say Consuela. I kind of like that name.
Oh, okay, because your Spanish accent was really off today.
Oh, it was awful. It was awful. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, that's...
And Juanita, the best you can come up with, Juanita?
Well, I was going off the fly.
That's an African American name.
What's that?
Juanita's not Spanish at all. That's an African American name.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Juanita is a Spanish name too.
It's not.
Well, I didn't want to call her Maria. I thought that then I would actually. I thought if I used Maria, I thought that was being too, you know, too easy. You know, Maria. For crying out loud. That's
no,
my favorite.
You should call her Carmen. Carmen and Josefa.
I could have used Carmen too. My favorite joke ever is the joke about back in the day. There was a joke about West Side Story, and they say that when he's running down the street screaming Maria, 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 only one girl came out the window in a Spanish neighborhood. I always love that joke.
I can't believe you're watching West Side Story.
But are you kidding me? It's a classic. It's a classic.
We gotta talk off the air about your movie and your movie preferences.
Look, I love movies. I love them all. Hey, are you gonna crap on me for liking Sound of Music too?
Let me set my mic off.
Look, I have a very, very eclectic love of film. I love movies. But Newt Gingrich, you know what? You go down there to the NAACP. You get down there to the NAACP and you tell those Negroes what's up. You tell them.
And you know, I hope they bounce his ass right up on out of there.
You know what?
I hope that Leroy and Quaid and Pookie and them bounce his ass right up on out of there.
Curtis, listen. Hold on. So you think what he said was racially insensitive?
Yeah, he should have broadened it. Come on, you don't get suckered into that and you're a presidential candidate. You just don't do it. I mean, he should have said what you said, and you know what? That nobody would have anything to say about it. If he had said what you said, you're not even running for president.
Okay, so you're saying what I said. What in particular are you saying that I said he should have said?
I forget the point that you made earlier, but I was like, yeah, he's dead on with that one. I forget exactly what it was that you said. I need to start taking
paraphrase.
Notes. Paraphrase. God,
what?
You've been talking for like the last hour.
Okay, I've been talking for a long time. That's what I do.
When you said, I'm not going to actually repeat it. Don't repeat it, please.
No, okay.
Wow. I feel like I'm on a Republican debate now. I forget what I was going to say.
So the crux of what it is that I was saying was to go in there and say that, look, there are plenty of you who are on the dole, and this particular government wants to keep you on the dole because what they want from you is your vote. They don't care about whether or not you make money or you make a living. All they care about is your vote. And that's it. And you can't dispute it. I don't care what anybody says. You can't dispute it.
No, you're pretty right. You're spot on with that one, but like I said, he should have made the statement a little more broader.
Look at it this way.
And he said he would march into the NAACP. What are you marching for?
Well, I don't understand why that's even a problem. But hold on, let me try this on for size. Let's take Charlie Rangel for instance, because I'm going to use one black politician. And Charlie Rangel is, I think, the perfect person.
I'm surprised you know any of them, but go ahead.
If I'm Charlie Rangel and my community is in ruin, I got drug dealers, gangs, whatever it is that I got going on in my community, and my community, I don't have people working, I got single mothers, I've got ill-educated or uneducated children in my community. Now, what do I do? So people come to me because I'm the local representative of that town. So they all come to me and they go, Charlie Rangel, the conditions of our community are deplorable and we need help. So Charlie Rangel goes to the federal government and he says, listen, and that's what the politicians are there to do, to go get
money.
Well,
that's the problem in itself. That's the whole problem right there. You see, largely in the African-American community, we believe that the president has all the say. He's the end-all be-all. It's his word or nothing.
Right.
And what it is that my community is not really educated on as far as voting is that, you know, if you want to chop down a giant, you got to cut them off at the knees. You got to start with your local politicians, and they don't really know who their local politicians are. One,
right.
Two, they don't know what their local politicians represent. We're quick to run in there and pull that Democratic lever all the way across the board.
But, you know, but that being said, listen, if you go to Charlie Rangel and you say that your conditions in your community are deplorable, right? And Charlie Rangel says, and what he's supposed to do as a politician is go to the federal government and get more funds for that community. Now, remember, if you think that if all of a sudden everybody in the community flourishes, more people are getting married in your community, more kids are getting educated and going off to college, more kids are not selling drugs and they're going to school, more and more kids are starting their own businesses, or families are starting their own businesses, and their community is thriving. Everybody in the community is making money. Charlie Rangel's job is now diminished. Now, he can rave all day about, look at my community. Look at the work that I've done. Everybody's got jobs. Everybody's started a business. Everybody's going to school. Our graduation rate is at the highest in the world. That's what liberals should be touting, but they don't. And remember, if you don't have a community that does all those things and they're failing, you have more access to federal funds. And all Charlie Rangel is doing is let the town suck. Let the town fall apart.
That way
he'll
continue to have a job.
And he continue to have a job and continue to remember, you always want, you always need. And as long as you need, I can provide. So you have to keep electing me, because if you keep electing me, I'll get it. But again, look at Chicago politics. Chicago politics is the same. Democrats and blacks have been running, the black leagues have been running Chicago for the longest, and it keeps getting worse.
Just like I say right here in the First District of Connecticut. First District of Connecticut, John Larson. You know, I worked on the Backlund campaign back in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
2000. And many of the community voted for... they voted Democrat across the board, not knowing who it is that, you know, that they were voting for. And, you know, I spoke to them after spoke to a lot of people after the election, and, you know, I asked them who they voted for president, and they voted for the Democrat, you know, they lost. And I said, why did you vote for him? I said, well, we're Democrat. I said, well, why did you vote for John Larson? Well, who the hell is he? I said, well, you pulled a Democratic lever all the way across the board, you voted for John Larson. He says, well, I don't know who that is. I hear the name on TV sometime. Well, he's the one that represents you in Washington. I said, now, you lived in Hartford for how long? Well, I lived in Hartford all my life. How old are you? I'm 27 years old. Oh, okay, so all your life, Hartford's gotten progressively worse and worse and worse. You agree? Yep, I agree. Well, do you realize that the seat in Congress that is currently being held by John Larson has been held for Democrats for the last 44 years?
That's right.
Long before you were born.
And it's still getting worse, as usual.
It gets worse.
I don't know whether or not they're ever going to wake up, but I don't think soon.
The thing is, they're not being taught properly how to vote. And I try desperately everyone I come into contact with that I would even consider talking politics to. And I'm no expert in politics, but I know enough to you know, to explain it, but it's like, what? Pay attention.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and I know you've got an opinion, so give yours. The number is 347-308-8701. 347-308-8701, right here on Reese on the Radio.
Yes, love hurts. It can hurt emotionally, but more important, it can also hurt you physically. It can hurt you in a way which nobody who owns a hot tub and lives in California can afford to be unaware of. Yes, I'm talking about California hot tub rectal gonorrhea. This painful, incurable disease can make an enjoyable soak in a hot tub with family, friends, and dog into a literally unforgettable experience. If you catch California hot tub rectal gonorrhea, not only will you walk around feeling like you're about to pass a twisted sardine can lid, you'll also smell like a pile of burning tractor tires. So don't jump out of the frying pan and into the hot tub, because if you get California hot tub rectal gonorrhea, it'll really burn your ass.
This has been a public service message brought to you by the Citizens Against CHTRG Foundation. California hot tub rectal gonorrhea. We're not going to take it sitting down.
Hello, Lois. This is Mike. I'm the personnel director here at your husband's work.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm fine. And how are you?
Fine.
Lois, are you sitting down?
Yes.
Well, I have some bad news.
What do you mean, bad news? Bob's okay, isn't he?
Well, actually, that's why I called to talk to you. It's about Bob, and I know that he's been an employee here for a very long time, but I'm afraid we're going to have to let Bob go.
What do you mean? Wait, that's not very fair. He's been very loyal to you.
Look, I can understand you feeling that way.
Feeling that way? You don't understand. We just had a baby.
No, I understand that.
This is a very hard time to do this kind of a thing.
Yes, it is, but Bob has kind of forced our hand on this.
Why are you firing him?
We caught him doing his secretary on his office desk.
Oh, that son of a bitch!
Look, I know you're upset.
Upset is not the word. That stupid, rotten son of a bitch, I can't believe this.
He's on his way home right now, and when he's going to need your support.
Support my ass! I'm going to change the locks on the door. I'm throwing his outside on the front lawn. He can just have it all. I'm not even going to be here when he gets back. And now, I don't feel so bad about his brother.
Lois. It's a joke. Your husband put us up. It's your birthday.
Happy birthday!
This is Stephen Hawking, and when I'm not solving the mysteries of the world, I listen to Reese on the radio on DogTalkRadio.com.
What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Then grab it.
Mary had a little man that sleeps as white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the man was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you. Reese.
It's Reese on the radio. We're back. The number 347-308-8701. Thank you, of course, for listening to the show. You can call in. I'd love to hear your opinions. Therapy Thursday, and I pushed it all the way back because we had so much other stuff to cover, and I had so many opinions. To break down Therapy Thursday, to give you sort of an insight as to what it's all about is I saw a lot of people on FM radio, morning shows, afternoon shows on FM radio. Everyone was doing this sort of thing where the listener would call in and tell the omnipotent host what their problem was. And the omnipotent host would give them advice, which I think personally is bogus. Who were you? I mean, you could be as worldly as anybody else, but you can't give people advice. And sometimes I've seen people give horrible advice. And so, you know what? I thought, you know, I got my own problems. And I'm smart enough to know, and I'm practical enough to know that when someone gives their advice, that you take it into consideration, you listen to them, and you hear what it is that they've got to say. And you know what? I've got my own problems. I do. I've got my own issues. I think it was an opportunity for me to share those issues with you. Oh, wait. Now, see, I knew this was going to happen. Hold on for me one second, folks. I got to do this. I got to hold on for one second. I'm going to go to a break. I think we have the phone call we've been waiting for. Give me 2 seconds, please, and let me just find out whether or not this is the phone call that we've been waiting for. Stand by real quick.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese. I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com. All right, it's Reese on the Radio, and we are live. We were going to go into Therapy Thursday, but I've been telling you guys for the last couple of days that I was going to be talking to someone very, very important who's been in the news for a little while, and he's going through a very, very tough time. But on the line with us is rapper G-Dep. Who is calling us live from Rikers Island at this moment right now. I've got him on speakerphone, so I'm going to do my best to make sure that you guys can hear him. G-Dep, I know you can hear me. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, what's good, man? Well, thanks for having me, Big Reese. You know, everything is all right, though, you know?
Yeah,
praise God.
Yeah, and again, definitely, man. Praise God. What I have to say to you, and I know we're not going to get into the details, but if I could break it down real quick. You did what I would consider a very, very noble thing. You came forward about a death of a young man, and you came into the 24th precinct, I believe it was, in Harlem, and you were accountable, and you were accountable. You went in there and you told them what it was that happened, and I think that what it is that's happened afterwards, I commend you because some people couldn't do what it is that you did. And I think that a lot of people out there who know you and know this case, you know, they're baffled because they're going, you know, wow, man, after all of this time to come forward was such a big thing. So tell me what it is that you'd like to say in reference to that.
I mean, you know, it's not really nothing, you know, too complicated, man. I mean, you know, I can't really, you know, I don't want to, you know, go into a lot of detail, you know what I'm saying, because it would really be unnecessary, you know
right,
what I'm
right.
saying? I mean, most of it is, you know, cut and dry, but I mean, you know, it's one of the things where I think anybody, you know, people say wow and all of that, but I think, you know, anybody really would have, you know what I mean, did what I did, you know what I mean?
Right.
If they were in that situation.
And I want to talk to you about that. What you did, I think, not only took a lot of courage. I think that you should be commended for that, regardless of the other side of it. I understand that it was recently reported in the news that the prosecutors are asking for 15 years to life. Your bid to get that sentence reduced failed, but I think a lot of people need to understand that what you did was a really, really, I mean, it was an incredible thing, all things considered. I talked to guys at Rikers, and they all, you know, looked at this whole situation and said, oh, man, he's crazy. Why would he do that? You know, he didn't have to do that. But you, as your story goes, says that you needed to make your peace with God, which I think is a brilliant thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Oh, wow. I mean, I don't even know what to say, man. Except thank you. You know, that's all, you know, that's basically, you know, all I could really say about that, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, that's how I feel about it. So, you know, anything else is like, I don't want to even start to, you know, rant on about what's this, and, you know, and other, other subjects and why you shouldn't do it. That was it in a nutshell. That's something that I don't even want to really speak on too much.
Right, and you shouldn't because it's still a pending case.
Yeah, it's still going on. It's something real, something real special to me, man. I don't really like to use that word too much, but it's sacred. It's sacred to me. What's going on with this thing here?
And I think that's the one point that I wanted to get across. Regardless of the details of what happened and what happened in the past, what you did today, and I think that is what really needs to be paid attention to, is that for someone to come forward and do what it is that you did, and I don't want to use the word commended, but I think it needs to be acknowledged. And what I would like to do, and the reason why I asked you to call in, was that I wanted the prosecutors or whomever it is or people listening, I wanted them to stand out and say, this guy, regardless of what happened, he came forward. That's something that a lot of people won't do. If you look at the lexicon or the group, the people or the zeitgeist of something like this, most people would walk away. But you saw something happening in your life that said to you or that said maybe your life was going down the road that was going because you needed this moment or this point to come forward and to do something righteous. In sense, I always say there's a difference between righteous and self-righteous. And self-righteous is doing what you think is right. You did what was right, period.
Oh, wow. That's real, man. I don't think nobody broke it down like that. That word right there is a strong word, man.
Well, it is. I think, and again, your past is your past. It always will be. You can't go backwards. You have to live in the now. And I look at the now. And I say that I commend you because it's a tough thing to do. It's a very, very tough thing to do. I was in Rikers Island. I know that place. I know what that place does to people. I know how that breaks them down. I know how spirit can be lost. And I hope you still have your spirit because what you did was righteous, my man.
Oh, man. Thank you, man. I mean, I'm day-to-day, I'm getting through day to day. Sometimes, like anything, you feel down with the ups and downs of, it's something that I needed to deal with anyway. I was out in the street, and I wasn't really dealing with anything anyway. So, the ups and downs are probably, it's probably more beneficial that it goes this way anyway,
If I can ask you a very, very personal question with the trials and tribulations, not the case in general, but where your life was when you made this decision, did you think that your life was going down such a horrible road that you kind of said, like, I might die out here doing what it is that I'm doing? Something said I need to make something right. I need to make things in some way right.
I felt like, I felt like I was going nowhere fast, actually. It wasn't really, it was like groundhog day,
Perfect analogy, groundhog day. It was the same day over and over again, and it never, ever changed.
Yeah, I was going through the day. Somebody was waiting for me to do something. We gonna, play your game. Not anybody, what I mean? I don't mean, in a literal sense. It was just situations were telling me was trying to, do something. And if I was going to be, an idiot and, just keep acting like I didn't understand what was going on, I was just going to just keep going further into the hole. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And I think if you may not see this now, and most people wouldn't, but I think for you personally, from what I see, I think right now what it is that you did bringing you out of that hole, because your only peace comes from God. Forget about the rest of the world. They don't know. They don't understand. They're just human beings. Your peace will and shall come with God. God will take care of you because God is the only person that we know that can forgive, that can truly understand and can say to you,
my son, my child, I love you no matter what. And if that is your mission, to make your peace with God, then you've made your peace. I'm there with you, and I support you for doing what it is that you did. And I'm going to do whatever it is. That's why I wanted you on the show, because I want people to know what you did is commendable. Not the actions that you took. What you did in the past is the past, but what you did to rectify that in some way was a brilliant thing. It was a righteous thing. And if I may ask you one last question, do you have or have you had any sort of contact? I don't even know if I guess I could ask. Have you had any contact or any response from the victim's family? Or are they supporting you? Are they maybe – are they pushing the 15 years to life? I mean, who's the precipice of the
– I don't really know, who's enforcing, what's going on with the as far as the time or whatever or anything like that. On that level, I just know, like, really that – you know, that was what the court came with, and I don't really, you know, all I heard from the people, from the victim's family, God bless the dead, it was just, what was in the paper, they kind of was just, they made their comment about what was going on, and that was really, I don't really have any other contact with those people or nothing.
Okay.
But I'm definitely, trying to, work on something, maybe that'll rectify our situation somewhat. I know,
Right. You want to make your peace with them as well, because they did suffer a loss. Now, to get to the point, I hear that you're now writing a book,
right.
And you're talking about pretty much your plight so far and what it is that you've gone through. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, the book is, it's an autobiography. It's one of those things where, I'm not trying to explain, or justify anything. It's just I'm trying to, just give people, another, the last, my last option. Obviously, I can't record, so, I don't know if people are even wondering what's going on or even care, but, I just think that, this is something that, from an artistic point of view that would, kind of close out what I was doing. For now, and I think it might answer some people's questions. So I think that's something I'm gonna work on. I'm basically what you were gonna say. I'm sorry.
No, I was gonna say that. Do you think that this book and it's poetry? If I'm correct, it's sort of a book written in poetry. Is that correct?
Right.
And what I believe that I think what would be beneficial, and I believe that you are trying to reach some of those young men who went down the road or going down the road that you went down, that this would in some way, and inspirational, I hate using that word, but I think that this would sort of give them tutelage in some sort of way. Is that kind of what inspired you to do this?
Yeah. I'm not really trying to, really... I'm really just putting it out there as an example. It's really, you could, kind of make your own synopsis of what you really think of it and what you're trying to do with yourself. But I'm just really trying to just like, just let it be known how I'm just putting my story out there. You're right. I'm kind of, trying to, give a positive message at the same time.
I know you got to go. I just heard the beep. I'm very familiar with that. Boss man, G-Dep, man, please call anytime you need. I'm going to follow up on your story as often as possible. I think that the prosecutor, in some case, I know what their mission is, but in your particular case, I think that because of what it is that you did, I think it should have some sort of consideration. And I hope that it does, and God be with you, and my respect to you, man, and just for calling, man, and it took a lot of guts and a lot of gumption to do that, please, and I send you my best. Tell Daniel I say hey,
and we'll
talk soon. You got my cell phone number, please call anytime you need.
I will. I'll probably call tomorrow just to see how you're doing, man. And I respect you too. I appreciate everything too. Again, man.
Thank you, man. G-Dep on the phone, man. Have a good night, man. I appreciate it. All right, man. All right, that's G-Dep, an interview that we promised that we were going to give you for days, and we finally got it. G-Dep talking about his case. A young man was murdered 18 years ago. G. Depp, of course, 18 years later, walked into the 24th precinct of Manhattan and took responsibility and locked himself up because his life, as he said, as you just heard, was going down a hole, and he thought that it was time to make his peace with God and to atone. And he did that, and I understand what it was he was going through. JC, did you have something you want to say?
Wow, that's an amazing story.
Yeah, and, you know,
the story is amazing.
Go ahead.
We do this all the time.
No, it's all right.
No, what I was going to say is not only had it gone down, and he had tried to turn himself in twice before,
mm-hmm.
and was turned away by the police in one of the stories that I was reading.
In fact,
I read it in a couple of the stories.
Yeah, one of the stories, they said that at the time that he came into police and tried to turn himself in, they thought that because he was either inebriated or intoxicated or whatever it was, that they turned him away. And then finally one day he walks in and they take him seriously. And he told so many details of the incident that they finally took him seriously. And now, you know, he's locked up in jail. They've offered him 15 years to life. His lawyer is, of course, trying to get some consideration for what it is that he did. And, you know, regardless of what it is you think, it's commendable. I understand he has to pay for his crime, and he understands that. That's why he turned himself in.
Right.
And I think that what people should ask for is some sort of consideration for what it is that he did, because there are plenty. If you were to ask anybody out there in the world whether or not they do it, I don't think they would. I don't think they'd have enough guts. I don't think they'd have the courage.
I mean, the guy's been living in his own prison for a while.
Right.
To bring himself to do that.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to him because, you know, he's humbled himself in such a way. And, you know, we talked earlier, you know, taking a life is taking a life. And it's a very, very serious charge. But he came forward and he's taken his lumps. And a lot of people, you know, don't do that. I don't even know what to say. It's like hiding with him for what it is that he did as far as the actions he took. But everything else that happened, I think he found out that the young man had passed or expired much later in his life and then tried to come forward when his life was turning into turmoil, which is unheard of. I mean, actually
right.
Unprecedented. And I think that's what it is that we need to consider. When do we give leniency? When do we – and not a pass. I'm not using the word give a pass. I'm using the word leniency. When do you get leniency? So that was G. Depp. You can look up his story, look it up on Wikipedia, and look up other news about G. Depp, and that's G, the letter G, D-E-P. G. Depp is his name. He is now currently locked up in Rikers Island. I saw him briefly while I was there before I finally came home. And, you know, that's pretty much it. It's time to go to a commercial break. We'll come back, and again, we'll go back into Therapy Thursday. I promise today will be Therapy Thursday. I never got to it.
There was once upon a time that to be a Republican in this area of the country felt a bit like being Gary Cooper in High Noon, outnumbered in a big way. But I remember the story of a fellow who was running for office as a Republican, and he was in a rural area and it wasn't known to be Republican, and he stopped by a farm to do some campaigning, and when the farmer heard he was a Republican, his jaw dropped and he said, "Wait right here till I go get Ma. She's never seen a Republican before." So he got her, and the candidate looked around for a podium from which to give his speech, and the only thing he could find was a pile of that stuff that Bess Truman took 35 years trying to get Harry to call fertilizer. So he got up on the mound, and when they came back, he gave his speech. And at the end of it, the farmer said, "That's the first time I ever heard a Republican speech." And the candidate said, "That's the first time I've ever given a Republican speech from a Democratic platform."
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes.
At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
how
you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, Reese, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message. There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back. Just got off the phone with G. Dep, rapper from Bad Boy Records. Committed a murder 18 years ago. Came forward late 2010, early 2011, and he's been locked up ever since. He tried to get the sentence reduced. The prosecutors in New York are looking for 15 years to life. And I I mean, I personally feel like not that he should be completely exonerated for his crime. He understands that, as you heard. He understands what it is that he did. And he's taking responsibility. And I've talked about that over and over, about accountability. And that's why I commend him for being accountable. Not for what he did, and not for his lifestyle, and not for the things that he's done in his past. But, you know, he can't do anything about that because that's his past. And what he does now is important. The power of now, Eckhart Tolle. And that's exactly where he is. So, okay, I promised Therapy Thursday. I dragged it, and we never, ever got to it. So here's my problem. You deal with it. So I got a nephew, and I love him. And he can be a terror. And my nickname for him is Terror Suspect, because you can always suspect that he is going to create some terror. He screams, he hollers, he yells, he, you know, whatever. And he's not my child, so, you know, I can't rear him. I can't, you know, I can't influence him in any way because I'm not his father. He looks just like my son Caleb when he was a baby. I mean, they are identical. Even my sister says it, that he looks exactly like Caleb when he was a baby. And she babysat him. She babysat him when, Caleb, that is, when he was younger. So she knows, and she looks at her own son and says, "Why, you know, just looks like him." My sister's exact words, quote, "He's got his big head," unquote. But sometimes I see his behavior and I want to step in. And he's not my child, but I want to step in. I guess maybe it's a fathering thing about me, but I want to step in and, you know, kind of set him straight. You know, he's only 15 months old, but I kind of want to, you know, get him out of those bad habits before they progress. And I don't know what it is that I should do. You know, should I ignore it? It's not my problem. I always use this scenario. If you're walking down the street and a little kid runs past you out into the street and a car's coming, do you not do anything and let the kid run to the street? Or do you grab the child and say, "Hey, what are you doing? Come on. Yeah, get yourself killed out there." And I know that's a little extreme, but I think that's what it is. When you see a kid behaving a certain way and you know it isn't right, you kind of want to step in. You kind of want to. But I don't know what it is that I should do. Should I mind my own damn business? It's hard for me to decide on whether or not. Not that I think that I should step in and tell my sister how to raise her child. She's got two older children. You know, how dare me? I couldn't do that. And in this case, I kind of feel the same way. But, you know, I'm around him often, and I kind of want to teach him. I feel like my tutelage would benefit him. And, you know, maybe I would be stopping something that may happen in the future. You know, maybe I'm being asked in some divine way, you know, step in. You're part of his life. Maybe this might be your calling, even for a small time, you know, to help raise him to be a good kid, you know, to know manners, not to break things when he gets angry. And that's what he does. He gets mad and he throws things down. He doesn't get his way. He grabs stuff and tosses it on the ground. And he screams and he hollers. When I say he hollers, I mean, he screams at the top of his lungs when he doesn't get his way. And I get a little concerned. And I know what I would do if it was my child. You know, there might be a little pat on the butt. A considerable one in some cases. Because that's what you do when you're a parent. You know that. You're like, whoa, this kid's way out of hand. I got to step in. And that's what I feel like doing. My question is whether or not I should. Should I mind my business and keep it moving? So I'm going to go to JC and I'm going to go to Mary. If Mary's on the line, I hope she's there.
I'm here.
And I want to know what should I do in this situation? Should I mind my own business, or, you know, just let the bricks fall as they may, or what should I do?
Okay, well, there's several. What would your sister do if you stepped in? How would your sister feel? What does your sister do when her son acts out like this?
Well, she kind of, you know, she's not heavy-handed. She's a little.
Does she coddle him?
Slightly. I think she does. She would argue that, but I kind of feel like she coddles him because the behavior, you know, it persists. So I kind of feel like maybe I should step in. It's because I love him, not because I'm angered or anything.
Is there a way for you to step in and not step on her toes and not make her angry or not question you on why you're trying to mind her way of taking care of her child?
No, yes, there is. And I've done that. I've done that because I've been around him very often. I've taken him out and, you know, I picked him up often. I think for a whole week I picked him up from his daycare, and he spent a considerable amount of hours with me. And he behaves when he's with me, probably because he knows I don't tolerate that bull. So he acts a certain way when he's around me. But then I see him around the women in the family, and he runs amok. And I think
Is this her first child?
No, this is her third. But I think she coddles him because he's the youngest. As you know, psychologically, most mothers do that. You know, they deal with the first two or maybe even the first child a certain way, and they deal with the baby another way because they don't want to make the same mistakes they may have made before. So that's where I'm sort of caught up. So, you know, like, how do I deal with that? I know it's none of my business, but I can't help it. It's just something that's drawn me to it.
But it is your business because he is a part of your family. So in a sense, it is your business. So if we all walked around with blinders on, you know, what would the world be like?
I got to tell you something. I got to tell you something that's probably going to make you, you're probably going to chagrin. You're probably like, ugh. But for a little while, like last week, I avoided him at all costs. I wouldn't even be around him. Like, he would be around, and I would find a way to actually get away from him and not engage with him because I was upset at his behavior, and I wanted to engage, so I kind of backed off. And I kind of feel like I felt awful about it. I felt bad.
As you should.
I felt bad that I ignored him because I wanted to kind of engage and say, hey, come on, guy, you know, chill out. You know, you don't have to act this way. He's only 15 months. Should I be, you know?
I think it has a great deal to do with your patience, maybe.
You're saying I have little patience?
For 15 months old?
I have plenty of patience. I'm very patient. Most people would argue with you and say that I'm extremely patient.
Listen, they're at that age of discovery and tantrums, and everything is mine. And they go through those phases. I would be really concerned if he were three and acting that way.
So you're saying that maybe I'm sort of jumping the gun because he's only 15 months.
I go through the territory.
But why does he act one way when he's with you and act another way when he's, let's say, around his mother or around grandma or so on? Because my nephews do the same thing. They act one way with their mother, and they act a totally different way with me and a totally different way with my mother. Because they know
they can get away with it.
Exactly. But that's a problem. That's a problem.
So, as you asked, why is he acting that way with them and different with me? I think because I have been extremely stern. I'm very stern. I think my personality is very stern with him. And I simply say no, and I talk to him. I don't baby talk him. Not that I'm saying that my sister does or my mother does in any way. They don't baby talk him. They talk to him in plain English. But I think I'm more stern because I'm a guy.
I applaud him.
Pardon?
Well,
I applaud him. He's manipulating at that age.
Yes,
that shows
I think,
he's intelligent.
Right, and he is. He's extremely intelligent. And
of course.
And I think that it's because, and again, I'm going right back to this, and I know I'm going to get heat. I hate to use the word weaker, but I think women are weaker to that kind of behavior from a baby. The baby screams and hollers. You do everything to accommodate, where fathers are a little stern and say, all right, you need to knock it off, and you need, you know, you need to behave.
Well, what you got to understand is babies that young, they can't really tell you what's wrong or what their problem is. So they used to be in super coddled by mom, because mom's trying to figure out what's wrong, why are you crying, what can I do for you? And
well, now,
they're going to get used to that.
Now,
and
Reese,
they're not offering that.
Mary, go
now,
ahead.
Now, Reese, what you said about, you know, women may possibly, you know, be a little bit weaker than men or is not as stern as men, that's really something that society has made the social norm when it comes
right.
to children and certain other things. So there is some truth to that. I won't say that there is not, because there is some truth to that, because we're brought up in with that social norm. Most people are. However, that is your choice to be that way.
Okay.
You can be a woman and be stern and have your children listen to you and do the right thing. Or you can choose to coddle them, and that does nothing but hinder them as they get older. So maybe what you should do is sit down with your sister and talk to her about it. See what her, you know, express your concerns to her.
I'm kind of nervous.
In a manner that's not going to offend her.
I'm kind of nervous about that. Not that I think that she would reject it. I don't believe that. I don't think that she would reject it. What I think that here's what it is that I feel like doing. I feel like I should limit my access to him, and when I am around him, sort of put those little nuggets to have him behave better. I think my sister, is the way that she deals with it, as you just said, was she is a nurturer, and women are, they're nurturers. The baby's crying, the baby's upset, how do I remedy that? And that's what it is that she does. Where I, on the other hand, I want to solve problems by being proactive. And that's my nature. That's not a man thing. I think that's just my nature. My nature is to be proactive.
Yeah, and that is another psychological, social thing again. It's nature versus nurture.
Yeah, but on the same token, you got someone, you're dealing with someone who hasn't the wherewithal to decipher the two. And he's just starting to develop those skills, and he's using them. I think that's super. But I mean, I agree. You should sit down with your sister, have a conversation. I think the only issue I can see with that would be is for her to take the stance of, oh, you don't like my child,
well,
or you have a problem with my child.
But she knows
huh?
that that's not true. She knows that that's not true.
No. Some women would get real offensive, like, oh, why are you picking on my? Why would you pick on my child like that? You know what I mean? Has she seen you on other kids?
Say again.
Where's the child's father? If you don't mind me asking.
He's not available at this time.
Okay, so he's indisposed. Okay.
He's indisposed.
That child is brilliant.
So, how are her other two kids? Are they?
Well,
behaved? Are they products of?
They've got their own issues, which I'm not even going to disclose. And that,
okay.
And when I say issues, everybody's got issues, but they've got their own things. But they're old enough; they're teenagers now. So I mean,
but
that's a different thing.
But do you think that the issues that they have right now stem from the way that they were raised since they were a baby?
No, it's funny that you say that. I think the coddling is because of, as I mentioned earlier, you raise the first two kids a certain way, and you see the turnout, then you have a new baby,
and you go a completely different direction to avoid that. So I think the nurturing on my sister's part has more to do with an avoidance tactic to get this child to grow up differently. You see my meaning?
But when you avoid things, but when you, if that's what it is, if it's an avoidance tactic on her behalf, she's only hindering him and her and anyone else involved, because you cannot avoid issues like that and think that they're just going to go away. I mean, he's only 15 months. I mean, I thought you were going to say, like, he was like a teenager, or he was, you know, at least a toddler, but he's only 15 months. But even at 15 months, if you're throwing things around and screaming and having tantrums, somebody has to teach you that this is not the way to deal with things.
So you think that I should step up in some degree?
Especially if Dad's not around, yeah.
I think to some degree you have a responsibility to do that. But if you do that, you also take the chance of the repercussions from your sister of maybe some not so nice words of, you know, why are you trying to step in? Who do you think you are? Whatever. I don't know your personal relationship with your sister. So I can't say.
We've got a great relationship. We do. We have a great relationship. I love her to death. She loves me to death. I'm her big brother. She's, you know, she loves all of her brothers. She's very, very, loving and caring to us. But that's, again, I don't want to overstep my bounds. But what he does is so
blatant.
Well, not so blatant. It's just, it affects me so that I kind of feel like that's the reason why I brought it up, because again, it's kind of an issue. I mean, if he wasn't important, I wouldn't mention it. You know what I mean?
You know where that comes from? You know where that comes from, Reese? That comes from you being a Leo.
Oh, God. You really think it has to do with my zodiac sign?
I do. Well, you know what? Maybe it doesn't, because my sister coddles her kids to death, and she's a Leo. But I don't know how she ended up being a Leo, because I feel the same way you feel. If there is a problem, let's address it, or let's be proactive so that that problem doesn't even occur. So we don't even have to go through that.
Right, so it doesn't persist. That's what I feel.
Okay,
exactly.
Quick question.
Go ahead.
How far apart is the baby from the next oldest?
Wow, I want to say maybe 15, maybe 14 years.
14 years?
Yeah.
Oh, different baby, different time.
Yeah, way different time.
Right.
Wow. 14, 15 years ago, you can kick a baby down a flight of stairs and not get in trouble for it.
Say.
Today you look at them wrong, and the Department of Children and Family wants to snatch them out of the home.
Or they want to call the cops on you.
Yeah.
It's a totally different time. Well, you know what? No, I appreciate your advice. That's what Therapy Thursday is for, because I will consider that. And again, like I said, if it wasn't important, if it wasn't important to me, I wouldn't bring it up.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, you know, it's because I care. It's not because I think that I should run roughshod over my sister. It's because I care, and I care about him. You know, I've grown to love him. There's so many times I used to have a nickname for Caleb. I used to call him Puba, and P-U-B-A. Which stood for pumpkin basket. Don't ask. I'll explain it another time. But I used to call him Pooba. But every time I look at my nephew, I accidentally call him Pooba, or I call him.
You did that
Caleb.
One day while talking to me on the phone.
Yeah, exactly. I do that all the time because he reminds me so much of him, and that's where I say I'm worried about overstepping my bounds, because when I look at him and I'm around him and he's so sweet and so kind, and he's loving me and hugging me. He smiles at me in such a way where I can't resist. I just want to pick him up and hug him and kiss him. And every time I go through that, I think of Caleb, and I put on this dad mode, and I know that I'm overstepping. I don't want to do that.
Well, maybe what you should do is actually try, instead of avoiding him, try to spend more time with him and try to teach him in a fashion that won't offend anybody.
I agree with that.
Try to show him the right way.
You're absolutely
nurture
right.
That intelligence.
Yeah, you're absolutely
nurture
right.
Nurture that intelligence. Use it to your advantage.
All right, I guess that's the best advice I can get.
I used to.
I think that's the best advice I could get. Well, thank you, guys.
I used to all the time.
I appreciate it. Well, the number is 347-308-8701. We'll go to another break. And I've got a very, very interesting story talking about children. Tomorrow, on tomorrow's show, we're going to talk about a new ad that's running in Georgia, in the state of Georgia, about fat kids. And trust me when I tell you, it is one of the most provocative things I've ever seen in my entire life.
The chitlin-eating capital of the world, Georgia.
That's just insane. We'll be right back. It's Reese on the Radio. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and I know you've got an opinion, so give yours. The number is 347-308-8701. 347-308-8701, right here on Reese on the Radio.
Yes, love hurts. It can hurt emotionally, but more important, it can also hurt you physically. It can hurt you in a way which nobody who owns a hot tub and lives in California can afford to be unaware of. Yes, I'm talking about California hot tub rectal gonorrhea. This painful, incurable disease can make an enjoyable soak in a hot tub with family, friends, and dog into a literally unforgettable experience. If you catch California hot tub rectal gonorrhea, not only will you walk around feeling like you're about to pass a twisted sardine can lid, you'll also smell like a pile of burning tractor tires. So don't jump out of the frying pan and into the hot tub, because if you get California hot tub rectal gonorrhea, it'll really burn your ass.
This has been a public service message brought to you by the Citizens Against CHTRG Foundation. California Hot Tub Rectal Gonorrhea. We're not going to take it sitting down.
Hello, Lois. This is Mike. I'm the personnel director here at your husband's work.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm fine. And how are you?
Fine.
Lois, are you sitting down?
Yes.
Well, I have some bad news.
What do you mean, bad news? Bob's okay, isn't he?
Well, actually, that's why I called to talk to you. It's about Bob, and I know that he's been an employee here for a very long time, but I'm afraid we're going to have to let Bob go.
And what do you mean? Wait, that's not very fair. He's been very loyal to you.
Look, I can understand you feeling that way.
Feeling that way? You don't understand. We just had a baby.
No, I understand that.
This is a very hard time to do this kind of a thing.
Yes, it is, but Bob has kind of forced our hand on this.
Why are you firing him?
We caught him doing his secretary on his office desk.
Oh, that son of a bitch!
Look, I know you're upset.
Upset is not the word. That stupid, rotten son of a bitch. I can't believe this.
He's on his way home right now, and he's going to need your support.
Support my I'm going to change the locks on the door. I'm throwing his outside on the front lawn. He can just have it all. I'm not even going to be here when he gets back. And now, I don't feel so bad about his brother.
Lois. It's a joke. Your husband put us up. It's your birth. Happy birthday!
This is Stephen Hawking, and when I'm not solving the mysteries of the world, I listen to Reese on the Radio on DogTalkRadio.com.
It's Reese on the Radio. We're back. And, we had a great interview with G-Dep today, and I was actually very impressed by him calling. And it was for me personally, it was a good thing. I'm very, very happy that he did. And if you'd like to get some more information about G-Dep, you can email me at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com, or you can check out www.reeseontheradio.com. I'm going to post some stuff about him that you can look over this weekend. I'll do it tomorrow. You'll be able to check that stuff out. And, of course, all the other stuff that's going on in Reese on the Radio world. A bunch of things are going to be coming out tomorrow. I wish I could play that audio about those kids, the kids in this commercial about obesity It's such an amazing commercial that they would run. A little boy sitting in front of his mother, "Mom, and why am I fat?" And another overweight girl talking about how she's bullied. It's I know that some people have an argument about obesity and kids being overweight in this country, and I know they've got opinions, but I think that this was a little extreme, especially putting these children through that, or in some way making children. I thought the whole idea, personally, was to make children feel like they were accepted, that they were just as good as anybody else. But they don't believe so. This commercial says that. Just to recap, if you didn't get a chance to hear the show, today we talked about our first story. Of course, the Oklahoma City woman who killed an intruder. His accomplice has now been charged with first-degree murder. And we talked about whether or not the prosecutors are fishing for somebody to be charged with the murder, as if in essence to say that the murdered perpetrator is now in some essence a victim, and whether or not that's going to open the floodgates to a civil suit in some way, because I believe it does. Once you charge someone with murder, that in essence is saying that there is a victim, because that's what it is that you say when you charge someone with murder. You say the victim. And that's what the prosecutor is going to say. And if there's a victim, you know, this isn't a victimless crime, according to them. There is a victim here. And whether or not that family will be able to get some sort of financial restitution for the death of their family member. We also, after we talked about the Prius, the Chevy Volt, and these knuckleheads who buy these cars that are hybrids, and what a joke that is for them to be purchasing them. And the 8,000 Chevy Volts that were recalled because they were set on fire after they caught fire, I should say. They caught fire 3 days after the crash, so they're pulling all of these 8,000 vehicles back. And how much of a joke it is for you to purchase these vehicles, and, you know what else can I say about that? We also talked about Newt Gingrich. And in their headline, that Newt Gingrich targets blacks in making a comment about welfare and blacks on welfare, even though he was being asked what he would say to the crowd at the NAACP. And that didn't seem to make any sense to me, that they would say that he targeted blacks when indeed he was going to be talking to the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Then we had our conversation with G. Depp, who called spur of a moment. We need to get that audio if we can. In fact, I'm going to work on that as much as I can tonight and see if we can get that audio spliced up. So if we can't play it on another show, we at least get some other people some opportunity to hear that. It was great of G. Depp to call. All things considered, he's facing 15 years to life, according to the prosecutor, and that's what they want. Step forward 18 years after a young man was murdered in a botched robbery, and G. Depp, whose life, in his own words, was falling down a hole, wanted to make his peace with God and decided that it was time to come. It was great of him to come forward and you know, say something about it and do something I'd say find his peace with God, and I applaud that. I applaud.
Amazing story.
It is. It's an amazing story. No matter where it is that you come from, you always have to ask yourself, could you do it? And I think that's the crux of the story. Could you do it? If you did something wrong and you had gotten away with it, you know, can you make your peace with it? How do you make your peace with it? I know there are a lot of people out there who can do crimes and, you know, not bat an eye. And this is someone who years later, in fact, tried twice, JC, as you said, tried twice to turn himself in. They pretty much want to lock them up. But that's it for the show today. Therapy Thursday, of course, it will happen every Thursday right here on Reason Radio.
Uh-huh.
on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be back tomorrow. JC, I'm actually going to be out of here. I'm going to Connecticut, so I'll be calling you from there. I'll be spending the weekend out there, and I'll be having a great weekend.
Goodbye to Mary.
What's that?
Let's say goodbye to Mary.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me say goodbye to Mary. I apologize. Mary, as usual, thank you for coming on. I always appreciate it.
Anytime. Anytime. My pleasure.
You know I love you. So, again, if you want to see want archives, please log on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. Please come here to blogtalkradio.com/ReeseOnTheRadio.com to check out all the archives and everything it is that we're talking about. Another great show, and we're happy to do it every week. We will see you. And I don't know, what else can I say? We love you, as usual.
Peace.
Peace.